NPR.
That's real. Yeah, that's real.
So, would you mind introducing yourself?
I'm Ian Fowler. I'm the geospatial librarian and curator of the Lionel Pincus and Princess Furial Map Division at New York Public Library.
You didn't even take a breath.
I know, that's impressive. And where are we right now?
We are in the stacks of the Map Division here at New York Public Library.
And what are we looking at right now?
We are looking at the Commissioner's Plan of New York, which is, to put it broadly, the plan that had the grid for the first time.
The original grid. The OG.
The OG!
We can stop whispering now. New York is famous for being laid out in a giant grid. It seems obvious and even natural now, but back when this map was introduced to the public in 1811, no one had ever seen anything like it.
It's not the first grid in the United States, but it was going to be the greatest grid.
And this map is really beautiful. It is like 8 feet long, and it's on six different big sheets of parchment.
Brilliant. Such an amazing map. I mean, it's beautiful, too, isn't it? Look, with all of the...
It is beautiful. It's very colorful.
Yeah, it's gorgeous.
But people did not really see it that way back in 1811. It was kind of a shock when it was released. There had been a lot of fanfare around the making of the map. It had been drawn up in secret by a group of city commissioners.
We talked about the drawing of the secret map on the show yesterday. If you missed that, you should go back and have a listen.
Back in 1811, New York was this tiny, dirty port city. It had fewer than 100,000 people, and the city was mostly these skinny, meandering streets with tent cities and farms.
Most of Manhattan was this wild, foresty landscape, rolling hills, cliffs, marshes. And then these commissioners dropped this map that slices the whole island up into uniform squares, essentially a plan to squash the bucolic island flat like a bug and pave it over. It was pretty radical.
Yeah, New York was set to become a living, breathing Excel spreadsheet.
The horror.
The horror, for real. This is The Indicator from Planet Money. I'm Stacey Vanek Smith.
And I'm Patty Hirsch. Today on the show, we're at the library.
We're at the library.
With Ian Fowler, trying to keep our voices down and learn about the Great Grid of New York, why the city planners for New York decided on the grid.
This message comes from NPR sponsor, State Farm. Why do you need State Farm renter's insurance? Because it helps protect the stuff landlords don't, like your furniture that gets drenched by a broken pipe. State Farm renter's insurance. Find an agent or get a quote at statefarm.com. Support also comes from Capital One, where you can open a savings account in about 5 minutes and earn five times the national average. This is banking reimagined. What's in your wallet? Capital One N.A., member FDIC.
When the map of New York was released in 1811, it was kind of a shocker.
Yeah, Ian Fowler says people kind of freaked out. The big world capitals at the time were these organic, sprawling cities like Rome, Paris, London.
Yeah, meandering streets, the Thames, Montmartre, the Seven Hills of Rome. I mean, that's a city.
There was real disagreement about it. But clearly they lost.
So why not let the hills be hills and the city be more organic? Why the grid?
Well, there were four main reasons for the grid. The first was health.
Yeah, there had been these terrible epidemics of yellow fever and other diseases that had swept through the city. And there was this theory at the time that the diseases were spread in stagnant air. So a grid would, you know, keep the air circulating, kind of flowing.
So, good for public health. And New York was growing very fast. It was already shaping up to be one of the most important cities in the new United States.
Really, the economic engine of this new country. Which brings us to the second reason the commissioners chose the grid, housing.
The commissioners said as much in a statement they released along with the map, saying, quote, "A city is to be composed principally of the habitations of men, and that straight-sided and right-angled houses are the most cheap to build and the most convenient to live in."
Is that your circa 1800s voice?
I think that's how people used to speak back then.
They were very tense a lot of the time because of the non-circulating air.
It constricted the throat muscles.
It's true. I mean, everything about this map was very precise.
The avenues were apparently drawn out to be exactly 100 feet wide, and the streets were all 60 feet wide, and the grid ran all the way up the island.
That was, you know, good for housing and a boon for New York's budding real estate business in general. Ian says these little chunks, these little city blocks, were pretty uniform in size, and that meant the land could be easily priced.
So, and the blocks that we have, They're slightly varying in size, but I understand is it the larger ones were an acre in mm-hmm. size?
Yep.
And in 1800, there's a record of a farmer buying, I think, 50 of these blocks, and they were $400 each. So $400 for a block of Manhattan.
How much would that be now?
I don't know if $400 would pay for the parking for you to look at the block.
It's probably true. $400 sounds like a good indicator.
That's a great indicator, yes.
So, Patty, let's make that our indicator. $400, the price of a city block in Manhattan back in 1811. If we adjust that to today's dollars, it's about $8,000.
So part of the grid logic had to do with air circulation. Part of it was real estate.
But Ian says there was a larger economic vision at play. Reason number three for the grid, it made it easier to move goods around. From the buzzing ports at the south of the island, to the busy roads, to the canals that were being built to move goods across state lines.
Ian Fowler says the 1811 grid branded New York as a city built for business.
This was going to be a city that was built for commerce. This was going to be a city that functioned exclusively for industry and for making New York the economic capital of the United States. And so what you want is easy transport of goods and people from the north to the southern tip, from the southern tip to the north, and then across the island. So it's really making it so that there's no roundabouts, there's no weird Boston-ish streets.
So none of this European frou-frou kind of organic or beautifully planned circles and roundabouts and, you know, Rococo, whatever. It's a tough industrial grid.
Straight lines. Efficiency.
Efficiency. Lots of efficiency. There wasn't even a park on the map. There was only one lousy green space, and it was set aside for military drills. It was called the Parade. It's right around where Madison Square Garden is today.
But the grid was also rational and predictable, kind of egalitarian. Philip Lopate, an essayist at the time, said the grid was, quote, impossible to overpraise.
Yeah, but in fairness, Philip was kind of an outlier. Popular sentiment was not team grid. There were a lot of critics and a lot of real harm done to New Yorkers. A lot of tenant farmers were displaced by the great grid. They lost their jobs and their homes. Whole communities were just pushed out. Landowners were basically forced to sell their land to the city because some avenue was set to run straight through their kitchen.
Yeah, emphasis on the word straight. That was kind of the elephant in the room with this map. The straight avenues and streets seemed to ignore the fact that Manhattan was, you know, like not a pancake.
Not at all. The word Manhattan comes from a native word meaning island of many hills. And Ian points out you can see all the hills and the topography markings on the 1811 map.
What is interesting about the map is it does reflect the topography of the time period. So it's obviously pre-grid, pre-flattening of Manhattan. So you
they flattened it?
Oh, yes. And then so they flattened the entire island, they gridded it out.
And this was an enormous undertaking. There were no backhoes back then or steamrollers.
You can see drawings and paintings of how they made this moving of the earth happen. There were these huge teams of men standing shoulder to shoulder with pickaxes and shovels and horses pulling carts full of soil and rock, moving up the island as a unit, flattening everything out.
For one city block, the survey reported they moved nearly 8 billion gallons of dirt just to get a flat surface for one block.
This was totally horrifying to many people. New Yorker and writer Clement Clark Moore said, quote, nothing is to be left unmolested. These are men who would have cut down the seven hills of Rome.
By the way, Clement was a landowner and he made a small fortune selling his land to the city to be flattened.
Well, you know, if you can't beat him, make a tidy profit.
It did mean a lot of jobs for people, though, in the city at the time.
Yes, absolutely. And they worked quickly. I mean, just 60 years later, most of the 1811 map had been realized, all the way up to 155th Street. Hills had been raised, farms had been paved over, and by then Central Park had been added to bring, you know, a little bit of nature back to the grid.
Contained nature. And the map worked. They built the city. And it came. More than 200 years later, New York is a flat, paved grid, tailor-made for efficiency and commerce, and one of the wealthiest cities in the world. The architect Rem Koolhaas pronounced this map the most courageous act of prediction in Western civilization.
A special thanks to the New York Public Library and Nora Lyons for letting us see the map. Today's episode was produced and fact-checked by Nadia Lewis, and The Indicator is a production of NPR.